Welcome to Animal Concerns of Texas, ACT Radio. I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Lenny.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT, we talk about how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
And we also discuss why a plant-based diet is healthiest for humans and the best thing that one can do for the environment.
So if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, if you're concerned about your health, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas.
Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with registered dietitian, author, and public speaker Juliana Hever, and scientist and author Ray Cronise. They are co-authors of the book Plant-Based Nutrition, The Idiot's Guide series. That's a little later in the show, but first some news.
Due to plummeting demand for dairy milk, 52 New York dairy farms have lost their wholesale contracts and have no one lined up to buy their milk. The average American drinks 37% less milk now than they did in 1970. This can be credited to a few things, of course. Many opt for milk alternatives for environmental or health reasons. But since humans do not naturally consume milk after childhood, let alone another animal's milk, lactose intolerance has also caused countless consumers to ditch dairy. With milk alternatives filling up supermarket shelves, made from everything from cashews, coconuts, peas, rice, oats, hazelnuts, hemp, and of course soy and almond, ditching dairy milk has never been easier. The rise in demand for milk alternatives is so high that the global dairy-free milk market is expected to reach $14.5 billion by 2020. Talk about an incentive for these dairy farmers to make the switch to a plant-based milk. A number of dairy farms have successfully switched over to growing crops like almonds and producing plant-based milk alternatives instead of dairy. As this proves, conscious consumers are making changes in the market. Market demand has caused major meat producers like Tyson and Cargill to invest in lab-grown meat, recognizing that the future of food is rapidly changing. If dairy farmers want to stay afloat, perhaps it would be of benefit to them to begin turning their dairy farms into plant-based farms that will match consumer demand and lead to improved sales for themselves.
According to a report recently released by Global Forest Watch that draws on satellite data from the University of Maryland, around 39 million acres of tropical tree cover were lost in 2017. To put that in perspective, that's an area about the size of Bangladesh. This appalling statistic makes 2017 the second worst year on record in terms of tree loss, with 2016 coming in first place. As satellite data has revealed, this isn't a new trend. Tree loss in the Amazon has been steadily accelerating over the past 17 years. So what's driving these unfathomable losses? In recent times, natural disasters such as tropical storms and fires have played an increasingly large role in wiping out trees, as these events have become more frequent and more damaging due to the effects of climate change. And even as hundreds of companies have pledged to change their ways to avoid contributing to further deforestation of precious tropical ecosystems, the widespread practice of clearing forests for purposes such as animal agriculture is still running rampant. In fact, it's estimated that around 1,600 trees are cut down every minute in the Amazon to make way for cattle and their feed. With forests being cleared at this extremely fast rate, current efforts to combat deforestation cannot possibly keep up. This unfortunate truth is apparent when looking at what happened at Brazil in 2017, when ranchers and farmers deliberately set forest fires last year to free up land for agricultural uses. The loss of more than 3 million acres of trees ensued. In this case, the destruction of forests was far greater than the work Brazil did to preserve its rainforests in the same year. As a recent study revealed, Brazil isn't the only place where this mass destruction is occurring. In reality, the overall trend is that tropical forests are disappearing much faster than they are being saved, thus resulting in the tremendous losses seen in 2016 and 2017. Forests play a crucial role in storing carbon, a process that goes a long way in slowing down climate change by preventing greenhouse gases from being released into the atmosphere. In fact, scientists have estimated that conserving forests could offer around 30% of the solution to keeping global temperatures increase at or below 2 degrees Celsius. So what can you do to help slow down tree loss so that we have a fighting chance at reversing climate change? One of the easiest and most effective steps you can take is to limit your consumption of meat and dairy by choosing to eat more plant-based foods. By making this one simple change, you will help reduce the demand for livestock and livestock feed, aka one of the largest drivers of deforestation. To learn more about how your food choices can help save the planet, check out onegreenplanet.org.
The Center for Biological Diversity reports that legislation approved in the California Assembly would require the California Department of Fish and Wildlife to adopt regulations to prevent whales and sea turtles from becoming entangled in commercial Dungeness crab lines. Senate Bill 1309 clarifies the department's authority and obligation to address the West Coast entanglements that have skyrocketed in recent years. The legislation was already unanimously approved by the California Senate, was approved by the Assembly Committee on Water, Parks, and Wildlife, and now it heads to the Assembly Appropriations Committee. The Center for Biological Diversity sued last year the department after three consecutive record-breaking years of whale entanglements. The pending lawsuit urges the department to better regulate the crab fishery to protect endangered whales and sea turtles from entanglements, including through temporary closures in Monterey Bay and other entanglement hotspots. The legislation, also known as the Fisheries Omnibus Bill of 2018, requires the department to adopt a comprehensive set of new regulations to minimize the risk of commercial crab gear entangling marine life by 2020. In the interim, it clarifies the department's authority to close regions of the fisheries or take other actions to prevent entanglements. West Coast whale entanglements have broken records in recent years. There were 71 reported whale entanglements in 2016 and 62 in 2015. There were 30 reported entanglements in 2014, and a total of 41 whales were reported entangled off the West Coast in 2017, more than quadruple the annual average before 2014. Earlier this month, the department introduced the first new regulations to change crabbing gear to reduce entanglements. The rules would allow retrieval of crab traps abandoned by their owners and limit the number of buoys and the length of line on active crab traps. Entanglements in ropes connected to heavy commercial Dungeness crab traps cause injuries and deaths as they cut into the whale's flesh, sap their strength, and lead to drowning. Each entanglement of a humpback whale, blue whale, or leatherback sea turtle violates the Endangered Species Act. To learn more, go to biologicaldiversity.org.
Stay with us. Coming up next is a conversation with Juliana Hever and Ray Cronise. Juliana is a registered dietitian specializing in weight management, disease prevention, and sports nutrition. She's the host of the wellness talk show series, What Would Juliana Do? On Z Living Network, author of The Vegetarian Diet, and the nutrition columnist for Veg News Magazine. She's also co-author of the cookbook, The Complete Idiot's Guide to Gluten-Free Vegan Cooking, and a recipe contributor to both New York Times best-selling Forks Over Knives books. Juliana has been featured on various TV shows, including The Dr. Oz Show, The Steve Harvey Show, and E! News. And Ray is a scientist innovator focused on disrupting food and nutrition advice. He's the mastermind behind Las Vegas magician Penn Jillette's plant-based diet, 100-pound weight loss. A former NASA scientist and Matthew Kenney culinary graduate, he's teamed up with leading academic researchers at institutions such as Harvard and the National Institutes of Health to publish work at the intersection of health span and plant-based diet. He's been featured by Wired Magazine, ABC Nightline, The Atlantic, Men's Journal, The Guardian, and more. Ray and Juliana are co-authors of the book, The Complete Idiot's Guides to Plant-Based Nutrition. That's next on Animal Concerns of Texas. Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas is Juliana Hever and Ray Cronise. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
It's great to be here.
Thanks for being with us, you guys. Ray, do you want to start out by telling us how you got involved with plant-based and vegan diets?
Yeah, thanks. Back in 2008, I like most people, I was I went through my career and I creeped up, and at the height of it, I was around 240, 250 pounds, and I had to lose weight. I was type 2 diabetic. I was high cholesterol. I tried several times beginning in 2006. Although I've been dieting, I would say most of my adult life, but I tried seriously in 2006, and finally in 2008, I managed to lose 50 pounds, and I actually did it with a completely different way. But at the time, the thing that really surprised me is my diabetes got worse, not better.
Oh, wow.
And so that was shocking. And my cholesterol didn't come down, it went up. I was at the TEDMED conference in 2009. I spoke the next year, but Dean Ornish was there with his wife, Anne. And he asked me, what I was eating. And the last three things in my diet were fish, a little bit of yogurt, and maybe cottage cheese. And eggs. That was the only animal products left. And so he said, would I be willing to give that up for, a month or so to see? And so on November 23rd, 2009, I decided to go completely plant-based for a year. Within 45 days, my blood glucose had normalized, you know, eating potatoes and rice and all these things that were supposed to make it worse. And my cholesterol came down, and I just never really looked back.
Yeah, it's amazing. Were you surprised? I mean, I don't know if you had any doctors that told you, hey, you should try a plant-based diet in order to get to rid yourself of diabetes. I imagine you were pretty shocked by the result.
Yeah, it went against everything I knew. I mean, you know, white rice caused diabetes. That's the way I thought. And I'm not saying white rice is a health food.
Right.
I can eat white rice all day long and not have high blood glucose. But, you know, if I have a few servings of salmon, it comes back. You know, it has to be obviously antagonized by having the starches or the fruits or something in it, but it comes back. And so me, if I can eat a diet that's, you know, 60-70% starches and fruits, whole food starches and fruits, you know, legumes and grains, and not have glucose problems, that to me is a cure. If I just remove all those, it's kind of like taking the car away and look at someone's driving record and saying, oh, wow, you don't have any accidents. Or tickets, you know, you must be a great driver now. And so to me, that's what was shocking, and it really did not fit anything I believe to be true about food.
What about you, Juliana?
So I come from a very different perspective, and I had two kind of parallel stories that happened. So on one hand, I was always fascinated by nutrition and diet and all that, and so I was reading and reading. And when I was a teenager, I stumbled upon John Robbins' Diet for New America. Yes. And when I read that book, my heart stopped. It was like, how could I not know this? How I just didn't want to contribute to that. And I didn't know what that meant. This is way before internet. And I didn't know anybody that was a quote unquote vegetarian. So I just kind of said, okay, that's it. I'm not eating any animals. And I didn't, you know, my parents didn't know what I was talking about. I didn't know what to do. So I was just trying and, you know, eliminating the animal products and eating kind of not the healthiest foods. But you know, ultimately, my parents were worried about me, and they had their friend who's a nurse kind of have an intervention and tell me how I'm going to be iron deficient and protein deficient and be sick. Right. And so I got scared ultimately. And then, you know, I write about this in the book, The Vegetarian Diet, where the first bite where they took me to a steakhouse and made me order a teriyaki steak with a pineapple ring on top. And I'll never forget that first bite, because once you know, you can't unknow.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
It was very hard. And it took me a while, and I eventually, you know, acclimated back, but I always knew, and I kept reading. And then at the same time, on the other side of this, I was, you know, I grew up in Los Angeles, so I know this is kind of cliche, but I was doing the whole acting and dancing thing. And, you know, when I was doing that, everyone is telling you to lose weight, and it's all about diet. And so I was reading a lot about weight loss. And because of that, I became a personal trainer. And when I was personal training, everyone was asking me about nutrition, and I wanted to know what I was saying before I dispensed advice. So I signed up for grad school, and, you know, I fell in love with studying nutrition. And it took me, you know, I had a full-time personal training practice, but I was, you know, full-time working in my graduate school, became a dietitian. And the best part was at the end, everything kind of came together, and I realized, wait a second, because now I can go dig into the research and I can find the real answers. Wait a second, you could actually get protein from plants, and oh, you can get iron, but better from plants, and that was it. And then I switched my diet. I guess it's been 13 years now, and everything changed for me physically. Like, I felt completely better. Obviously, you know, just I was very excited for the other reasons, because I really did start this for the animals. But then when I implemented plant-based with my clients, you know, the difference in their health outcomes from what I was teaching before, the stuff I was taught to teach, versus going plant-based, all of a sudden my clients had extraordinary outcomes. They were losing weight easily. They were getting off medications. They were, you know, actually getting better. And it was just, I have never looked back. It's been incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I guess, you know, Los Angeles obviously has a different reputation for openness to more plant-based foods. But how was the response from your clients in terms of were they open and willing to take this? You know, some people see it as such a big challenge to try and change their diet. Where did they respond well to it?
Well, so it's been an evolution for me as a healthcare practitioner, because at first I wanted everyone to eat plants, and this is the way, this is, you have to do it this way or bust. You know, I would take on clients and try to convince them. And it took me a few years of knocking my head against the wall to come to the conclusion that you could lead a human to healthy, but you can't make them. And I decided from there that I'm not going to try to force anyone, but I'm also not going to work with someone. Like, there's plenty of people that'll tell you to eat chicken breast over red meat, but that's not me. So if you're not willing to try this and have these extraordinary results, then find another dietitian. And so I had to kind of come to terms with that. But that's been really liberating for me. And now I work with people that are really excited. And my goodness, what you guys know, what's happened in the last 13 years is unbelievable change.
Yeah.
And, you know, acknowledgement of the power of this diet. So it's like now I'm just, you know, people are just knocking on my door, please work with me. So it's changed a lot. It's very exciting.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people, too, previously were just content to take a pill. Like, I want to eat my steak, and if I have to take Lipitor, that's or whatever pill it is, that's fine, because I don't want to change my diet. I'd rather take these medicines. And, like, you know, with diabetes, same thing. You know, I just rather take my medicine and continue eating like I eat.
Yes, and there still are a plenty of those people, and it's sad because they're not going to have the same results.
I think what has also changed is the on television commercials now that they have to list all the side effects, and they're saying things like, this might cause death. You know, I think people are moving away from traditional medicine a little bit more and looking back a couple of thousand years to Hippocrates saying, let food be thy medicine.
But the irony of that, those commercials, is that they're always sandwiched between fast food commercials.
That's true. Well, you know, speaking of weight loss, Ray, I know many of you or listeners are aware of Penn & Teller, the Las Vegas magicians, and, you know, their variety of TV appearances and things. And you worked with Penn Jillette on trying to help him with his weight loss. And I think a lot of people look at him and hardly even recognize him anymore. Maybe you can talk a little bit about how you worked with him on that 100-pound weight loss.
Yeah, so Penn and I have been friends for over 20 years. We met through another friend, actually a Texan, Tim Jennison. And so they did a documentary together, Tim's Vermeer. But anyway, Penn and I have known each other for all this time. And I was coming back from doing some research for a book that I'm writing, and he was just shocked at my weight loss and called me a day or so later and said, hey, I've been told basically I need to either get, you know, the gastric bypass surgery or I'm going to die. Like, he had uncontrolled blood pressure. So not to tell too much of the story, because he has an amazing book that he wrote about our journey called Presto, How I Magically Lost or How I Made 100 Pounds Disappear. It's really funny in Penn style, if you know that.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, the interesting thing about it is that with Penn was that he really is a disciplined guy. You don't get to that kind of success without doing it. And he's probably one of the most successful weight loss clients I've ever had.
Wow.
In terms of just sticking with it. But he was also like me. And, it, you know, if I know for people who don't know me, they certainly know Penn. He was certainly not going to come at this from an ideological perspective. But at the same time, he really, the facts matter with him a lot. And so he wasn't prepared for his diet to change. And if anybody's out there and, you know, and thinks, hey, you know, this health thing might be for me, I would invite you to watch Penn Jillette's YouTube video. Just put Penn Jillette weight loss big think in YouTube and watch that video, because it's very compelling and it tells what happened. He had no idea that his palate would change. So, like, whereas we all know that the food we have, we enjoy it, most people see this as deprivation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if you ask someone who's not a smoker, how deprived do you feel of cigarettes? Their answer is they don't. And I don't feel deprived of chicken. I don't feel deprived of fish. I don't feel deprived of steak. I don't feel deprived of anything, because I learned to love the new food. And until the new diet is equally convenient, familiar, and enjoyable, you really don't have a choice. One of those three things will dominate your plate. And so whereas you guys all came to this from an ideological perspective, and that became sort of your you know, your stake in the ground that you could use to, you know, to rein it in a little bit until your new habits formed. You know, for me, it was this unbelievable health that I couldn't achieve any other way. And so now we've, you know, as of, I think I looked at the numbers just a second ago, as of June 9th, we have 690 people who've lost 32,530 pounds.
Wow.
Because of that book coming out. All plant-based diet, all of them people that this message may or may not have ever heard. And so, you know, the good news for those of you that have that motivation, you know, from the animal rights perspective, I certainly don't, you know, condemn anybody who thinks this way at all, but I want you to know that, you know, I'm not eating any more animals, which is, you know, that should, it should be a win-win, but it's not. Believe me, I'm not always addressed when I go to events and people and I say I'm not vegan, I'm not always addressed with love and compassion. And that's the message I want to change. I want it to be, hey, look, we all need to get together and not just be divisive. And I think that that is what should be the underlying foundation principles. I just haven't always seen that in activism. And I don't know how you make someone to fall in love with you with guilt and shame. And so my message would be, hey, let's do this out of really compassion. And help is a really good thing. And this really brings me to something that I'd like, you know, Juliana to speak more about. And that is the shift we're now seeing. And this is very critical for the health perspectives of a vegan diet, the shift that we're now seeing in the health message.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of our concerns that we talk about, like one of my big talks that I give at VegFest now, is that there's a beautiful thing and there's a concerning thing about where we've gotten to, where anything you could eat, I could eat vegan. You know, like that has really evolved over the last 10 years and the marketplace is exploding. But what I'm seeing now, literally on a daily basis, are vegans coming to me with the same health problems as the meat eaters because of a lot of these products. So my concern is I just want people to base their diet, you know, really kind of take care of the health so that the message of veganism can be more prolific and more inspiring to more people. And that's I want people to just eat vegetables, fruits, whole grains, legumes, mushrooms, nuts, seeds, herbs, and spices, and focus on those staple foods for ultimate health and longevity.
You know, Liz is staring at me now because I I eat a lot of meat alternatives. But recently I've gotten more into raw. I think I'm a high raw vegan now.
Well, the thing is, it's not just the meat alternatives. It's like all of the soy ice cream and all of the soy cream cheese and all of these really delicious but calorie-dense items that, like you said, they have the same negative impact if you overeat a bunch of vegan French fries drenched in oil or whatever. It's going to have the same bad health effects. I agree.
100%. Exactly.
We have a framework called the food triangle, and it avoids using the words protein, carbs, and fat, and allows people to sort of look at food sort of very differently. At the apex, you have leafy greens, cruciferous vegetables, mushrooms, stems like asparagus and celery. And down each descending side, on one side, you have sort of plant-based starchy foods, starchy vegetables and fruits. And on down the other side, you would have animal products. And what we find is that when we look at a common diet, bottom feeding, as we call it, meaning you know, burger and fries, pasta and meat sauce, you know, steak and potatoes. You know, when you combine down the bottom side of the food triangle as traditional recipes have, you're actually doing, it's a very energetically efficient way to eat 100 years ago when food was scarce. But it turns out today we have a choice. And that's why you guys have the opportunity to sort of spread what you guys believe as a message, because people can eat a whole food plant-based diet, be healthy, afford to do it, have the access to do it, have the agriculture to do it, and it, you know, it has all the other benefits that you talk about. And so, but using the food triangle allows us not to make mistakes of saying, you know, do I get enough protein, or that's a carb, or, you know, this is a fat, like all of these things that we all know. Everyone knows there's contradictions. And if you read our paper, it's for your healthcare professional too. If you're thinking about changing your diet, clearly you need to involve your doctor in the decision. And we wrote this specifically for physicians and healthcare practitioners so they would know, you know, all the kind of nutritional things that you need to consider. But really and truthfully, a whole food plant-based diet really, you know, is something that's going to help somebody live longer.
Well, and it seems like in both your professional endeavors, you've worked with a lot of people who are, you know, sort of coming at veganism and plant-based diets from a very novice angle. Was that sort of the reason behind writing Plant-Based Nutrition, the Idiot's Guide series?
No, what's really exciting about that is I was just kind of digging in and speaking, and I was asked to write The Complete Idiot's Guide to Vegan Nutrition. This was in 2010, and I was working on that book, and I was just excited to have that opportunity to talk about it and just all the extraordinary benefits. I just wanted to have the book that when I was a teenager and I told my parents I wanted to be a vegetarian and nobody knew what to tell me, I wanted to have the book that if they had handed it to me, I would have known what to do. So I was really excited for that. But I petitioned to change the title from vegan to plant-based because it wasn't really a big thing to say plant-based back then. But I think that I wanted to show people the difference between the two definitions to me is like vegan is what you're not eating. It means I'm not eating animals. and plant-based means I'm eating plants. So I kind of like that difference, and I wanted to take the concerns of people that aren't going to come at it from the ethical perspective, and I wanted it to be more health-oriented. And I mean, I'm not an ethicist. I'm not a moralist. I am a dietitian, and that is my expertise. I am, you know, a health expert. So, you know, I don't want to teach about the other stuff because that's not my business. I have my own practice. I'm 100% vegan, and I do all that stuff myself, but that's for me personal, not an expertise. So that, the goal of that book was to have a handbook for people to be able to know why and how to eat a really health-promoting diet.
What concerns me is that the term plant-based has been co-opted to mean, to a lot of people, mostly plants with maybe a little bit of meat and dairy. There was even a dairy company that advertised their dairy milk as being plant-based because cows eat grass.
Oh, God.
So,
that's just crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is that we know that, I always say there's a spectrum, you know. If you're coming from someone like Penn Jillette, or someone that's eating a very animal-rich diet, and they start going down and getting rid of that stuff, they're still going to be better off.
Oh, yeah.
But the ultimate, yeah, the optimal diet is no animal products. Like, there's no question you'll see the difference. And like Ray says, he could have 3 servings of salmon in 1 week and bring back his diabetes. It's that powerful. So, you know, we want people to eat the most plants possible, and obviously I want everyone to eat only plants.
And it's a spectrum, remember, because this pendulum also swings. Once you become all plant-based the way we all are, that pendulum can really go over to the soy ice cream and all the other stuff that you guys were talking about. So by trying to define this just by what you're not eating, and this is a really important point, I think, to Juliana made, and it's we reinforce this with the second edition, which is very, very different from the first edition in terms of lots of extra material in it. But by focusing on what to eat and focusing that plate on whole food plant-based, if you're doing it from an ideological perspective and you slip a little bit, 5 or 10% over into the sugar, you know, stuff you shouldn't really be eating, well, you'll probably have okay health. You'll have improved health. And for those other people, if they slip over into the other stuff, they'll probably have okay health. But the beautiful thing is that as your palate develops, and as you enjoy these things, most of our clients, and you'll see this in Penn's video, stuff that he never, ever, ever thought he would give up, they just disgust him now. He just doesn't want to eat that anymore. It doesn't have the same pleasure as it once did. And how can you know what your new favorite foods are? Everything about food is habit. Everything.
Yeah.
We make up mayonnaise. It's not real. We just made it up. It's like creamy stuff. Mine's made out of cashews, lemons, and tofu. So
yeah.
What? It's mayonnaise to me. So the point I'm making is that, you know, this is one of the ways we need to all come together as a community and bring this message of health as at least a centerpiece. And those people that gravitate from one side, let's let them gravitate. The other side, let's gravitate, because if we're all fighting about 5 or 10%, you know, what does that mean in the big picture, right? We can go back to the temperance movement. The temperance movement never got over a few percent. All the same arguments, but at the same time, we have an unprecedented opportunity for access to whole foods, fresh foods, foods that are amazing, and I hope we don't squander that health, because as you say, so many people would rather just reach for a pill and cover the symptoms.
Yeah, I think it's a great opportunity. And like you said, there's just so many delicious options and so many recipes available online and so many wonderful books like yours. Can you tell our listeners again how they can get a copy of your books?
Yes, thank you. So we're on Amazon, and it's called Plant-Based Nutrition, Idiot's Guide, second edition. Don't let that fool you. A lot of people get offended by the Idiot's Guide, but I think it's so funny because it's a great series and it's a very accessible message. But what I did when we rewrote this year, it just came out in January, we put a lot of great stuff, because me and Ray started working together about a couple years ago, and our messaging was so similar, but also he adds so much to what I teach, because he comes at it from a very, you know, he's like a disruptor in metabolism. He's taught me so much about metabolism and health span and all this other research. And so we added all of that, and the book is very different. So it's on Amazon, it's at Barnes & Noble, and again, it's called Plant-Based Nutrition, Idiot's Guide, second edition.
We've been talking with Juliana Hever and Ray Cronice. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks.
Thanks, you guys.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
If you aren't currently vegetarian or vegan, but would like to try some delicious vegan food, here in El Paso, you can visit Eloise, Lick It Up, Queen's Table, and Savage Goods. They're among the many restaurants offering delicious vegan choices.
And if you'd like to learn more about a plant-based diet, you can visit the Veg Society of El Paso's website at vsep.org.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the many past shows of ACK Radio, you can find them at ktep.org. Just click on the listen button. Until next time, I'm Tom Linney.
I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Liz Walsh. For the animals, the earth, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.